Hi.
Hello.
Welcome to Let's Learn About, the show where we teach you things you didn't need to know, but we're going to teach them to you anyway. I want to apologise just before we start about my rubbish audio quality, if it's rubbish.
It's not that bad, don't worry.
Okay, cool, that's fine. I'm not speaking very much today anyway, so it's fine. We have a special guest today. Very exciting. It's actually our first Christmas episode. Klinos, you're actually kicking off our Christmas episodes.
I didn't realize it was the first one as well.
Yeah, yeah, just to throw that bombshell on you. We thought it a fun way to start our Christmas episodes would be to have a returning guest and one of our patrons, which is very cool. So yes, Klinos is our guest today. So I guess let's get straight into it and hand over to you. We're very excited. What are you going to be talking about today?
Well, I was inspired really when I think it was you, Charlotte, you were talking on an old episode about how are you going to keep Christmas content going every year?
Yeah.
So I thought,
yeah,
there must be a different spin that you can put on it. So, I had a think and I thought, how about like a famous event and a famous disappearance in this case that happened at Christmas? So we're going to be going back to Christmas 1944, so towards the end of the Second World War.
Ooh.
Yes, with a disappearance that really it shook the world. It's hard really to overstate the effect this had here in Britain and also in the US.
Right. Okay. Very intrigued.
Yeah, me too. Like, who is it?
Well, have you ever heard the name Glenn Miller?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
As in the band, Glenn Miller.
Glenn Miller's band,
yeah.
Yeah, Glenn Miller's band. So Glenn Miller, the man himself, he was a trombonist, he was a composer, and he was the leader. He'd created this big band, and they were huge in the 30s and 40s. You know, they were the equivalent of, or Glenn Miller was the equivalent of Elvis famous, you know, before Elvis.
Oh my word.
Sort of thing. So they were hugely popular.
Mm.
And I'd known the name, yeah, associated with a band. And I remember hearing his music mainly at like Christmas.
Mm.
Like my grandparents loved playing his album at Christmas sort of thing.
Yeah.
I never really thought much about the man. Sort of thought, you know, he's probably like this Santa sort of bloke. And he probably died, you know, at home surrounded by family when he was this really old man. Sort of, you know.
Yeah.
Nothing for that in truth. You just get these weird ideas as a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, but a couple of years ago when I found out the truth, the story I've got for you today, it's definitely a far more tragic story.
Oh my words.
Before we get into the episode, we want to remind you of a couple of ways you can help support the show.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date. We're at LearnAboutPod on Instagram and Twitter.
You can also support us on Patreon. For £2 a month, you'll get early episodes, fun bonus content, sneak peeks at upcoming episodes weeks in advance, and shout-outs in every episode.
Finally, leaving us a quick rating and review on Apple Podcasts will really help us out a lot.
Enjoy the show.
So, Glenn Miller, he was in his late 30s during the latter part of the Second World War. He joined the army. He signed up in 1942. He wasn't drafted. He decided to sign up of his own volition.
Yeah.
You can imagine people wanting to support their country, do their duty. And also from his sort of business music side of things, loads of young musicians were joining up. They'd been drafted, so it made sense if he wanted to have a band to sort of go where the musicians were. And like I said, his band were hugely popular. He as a figure was unbelievably famous, and joining the army didn't do his sort of image it didn't do any harm because his fans were in the army as well. So
right, yeah. Yeah.
True.
Yeah, and they, you know, they looked up to him even more in a way because, yeah, he's a guy like them kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it was a good decision on that respect as well. And actually, he went on to form a 50-piece Army Air Force band.
Oh, my word.
So, yeah.
Wow.
Yes, they arrived in England to perform at concerts during the summer of 1944. And they went on to perform, some places said hundreds, but the biggest figure I saw was 800 concerts.
Oh my God.
Oh my word.
So, yeah, I'm trying to just imagine the logistics of that and yeah. it being wartime. Is that like several concerts a day?
It must have been. It's got to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Otherwise, like it would have been like 2.5 years worth.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah. Like, even if the 800 is wrong and it was 500, that's still.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the band were hugely popular.
Mm.
It was just so important in terms of boosting morale. It had to imagine, really, you know, it's wartime, you know the local population are on rations, people are in the army, and then you have this amazing concert by this, you know, world famous band leader.
Yeah
you can imagine
it's
the sort
gotta
of
gotta just be a bit of an escape for a while.
Escape. That's definitely a good word for it. And they were performing in venues. You know, they were going into the hospital. So, you know, wounded people who'd been hurt during the bombing raids. They were going to aircraft hangars. You know, there was nothing really sort of out of bounds. So, they sort of went right to where the war was happening. You know, it was having its effect.
Yeah.
But of course, Glenn Miller was an American and the concerts were being broadcast back home as well. So he was definitely having an effect on both sides of the Atlantic.
Yeah.
And American planes, some of them even had the titles of his songs painted on their planes.
Wow.
That shows, you know, how he just such a way that he'd managed to get into the public consciousness.
It's
incredible, really, to think, yeah, during wartime, you know, pre-technology and limited communication, that that would have been a big deal.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So I hope I've set the scene, you know, it's... where Glenn Miller and his band were in the summer of 1944 in England. In December 1944, the plan was to leave England to entertain frontline soldiers who were on leave from their duties in Paris. I'm definitely not a war historian by any means, but we're in December 1944. We aren't that far away from the end of the war, so the tide is turning in France. So going to Paris was more viable than perhaps it had been in previous years in the war.
Definitely.
So Glenn Miller himself was meant to be going over to Paris on the 15th of December 1944 because he had some final arrangements to sort out for a particular show. But the weather was absolutely diabolical. And the flight he was meant to go on was cancelled due to bad weather.
Right.
Fog was just crazy. And I think actually historically that winter is one of the worst on record.
Yeah.
So it's not like it was just one bad foggy day.
No.
It was actually... Yeah. And yeah, quite sort of in meteorological circles, famous as a really bad winter.
Not like your typical English, oh, there's leaves on the line, so the trains cannot go. It was like legit bad weather.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So, the planes being grounded, you'd think, would sort of tell you it's not a good idea to travel to Paris.
Yeah.
But that didn't seem to bother Glenn Miller. He just thought, right, well, I need to find another plane. I need to get another mode of transport to get me to Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years since, people have questioned, why was he so desperate to get to Paris?
Yeah.
And I think it goes back to, you know, he knew the effect his concerts was having. You know, he could see how he was helping people and boosting troop morale.
Yeah.
And basically, I think he wanted to get over to Paris and give the soldiers who were on leave that escape and that fun couple of hours. I think he was, you know, he was pretty dedicated.
Yeah.
Which, fair play to him. But at the same time, if you're experiencing one of the worst winters and all the planes are down, that was usually a telltale sign. Maybe wait a day or two.
Yeah.
Hold fire for a sec.
Yeah.
Exactly. And he isn't just your average soldier.
No.
You know, yes, he was a major, actually. Yeah, he was sort of one of the guys, but at the same time, he was this world famous celebrity.
Yeah,
he was this VIP, essentially, and his movements were always known by the US military. He had to keep to the US military transport plans for him. So he was meant to go on this one plane. So if that didn't go, he didn't go in any other way. He had to go as the US military had arranged, and his whereabouts, you know, always had to be known.
Yeah.
But despite all of that, he was still in a hurry to get to Paris. And when his acquaintance of his, who was also in a hurry to get to Paris, he had a plane and a pilot available. And he said to Glenn Miller, come along with me, I'll get you to Paris. And they took off then from Bedford in England on the afternoon of the 15th of December, 1944. And it was a small plane. It was quite an unusual plane. I know nothing about aeronautical anything. Yeah. But yeah, I have, all I know is it's a small plane with a small engine.
Right.
A UC-64A Norseman, for anyone out there who knows what that means.
Yeah.
So they set off in this plane on that afternoon into this fog to disappear over the channel, and the three passengers in the plane would never be seen or heard from again.
God.
And nobody knows that this flight has gone ahead.
Oh, no.
Because Glenn Miller's not meant to be on a plane. His plane was grounded. He's not meant to be on another plane. Nobody is expecting him to be on a plane now. So it took a few days until anyone noticed that he was actually missing. Yes.
Oh, I know. My God.
I know.
The biggest bloke in the world at the time has just disappeared in a frigging fog of smoke. And no one knows where he is.
No. The plane itself, that was reported missing. A report was filed for the plane on the 16th, so the next day.
Yeah.
But this little plane going missing, nobody thinks, oh, Glenn Miller was on that plane.
No.
Knows Glenn Miller's on that plane.
No.
And not only that, but a small plane going missing, it was small news, because on the 16th it was a big day war-wise, because Germany began their Ardennes offensive, deliberately thinking the weather would harm the Allies' chances. So this tiny little plane going missing, it wasn't getting the attention that it might have done on another day. Everything's going wrong. So the sign that Glenn Miller is missing is when he doesn't turn up in Paris to meet his band, who have arrived now to play in these concerts. And finally, the US military top brass were informed. Yeah, and they were not happy. Quite famously, one of the officers sort of bellowed, how the hell did we lose Glenn Miller? It was like you said, you know, this world famous celebrity
has
disappeared into thin air, or foggy air. And, you know, can you imagine how embarrassed the US military would be? It was just like the worst thing that could happen to them.
Yeah. Can't even keep track of their bloke.
Yes.
It's one bloke.
Yeah, and the most high profile bloke as well, you know.
Yeah.
Who's, yeah, every step is more or less meant to be tracked.
Yes.
But it makes you wonder, like, did they, when the planes were initially grounded, did no one check that he went back to, like, their accommodation or wherever they were? Like, if they're keeping that close eye on him, how did no one spot that he didn't return to Diggs or whatever, or got on the plane that the rest of the band did when they were actually meant to go? Like, did no one at any of those points think, haven't seen Glenn for a while? Headcount.
Yeah. He should have still been in London. So he should have booked another hotel or something.
Yeah.
Not like he would have sort of needed to go undercover. You know, he would have walked into a hotel and needed a room. So it is, so it definitely should have. There were those little opportunities, to pick up the that something wasn't right. And it's not like the fact that it was bad weather was unknown. You know, it was such bad weather, other planes were grounded. This is going to go on to be a famously bad winter. It's just so we're a few days on from plane disappearing, and then on Christmas Eve the military informed Glenn Miller's wife.
Right.
You know, you just can't imagine. Glenn Miller was 40. He had a wife and family.
Yeah.
It's Christmas Eve and his wife is told, we've lost your husband.
He's missed. It's not even like they could say to her that they know he's died or something. Like, they literally just have to say he's gone and we don't know where he is.
Yes, yeah, and he's the most famous man, you know.
Yeah, and they've just lost him.
Yeah, Glenn Miller had been in constant contact with his wife, but, you know, because obviously communication in the 1940s, to go a few days without hearing or a letter wouldn't be unusual either.
Yeah.
Oh, you just think that poor lady going on with, you know, her life, preparing for Christmas while her husband's been missing for a week or something and she doesn't know. I mean, once she knew, once the family knew, there was no keeping it then from the wider press. So it was on Christmas Day 1944. The front pages of newspapers worldwide broke the news that Glenn Miller was missing. And the grief and heartbreak that this caused in the US, you know, Glenn Miller's music and his band and their concerts, you know, were getting people through the war.
They were
literally helping people to cope with, you know, this dreadful situation, you know, giving them hope, giving them that escape.
Yeah.
So to find out on Christmas Day that their hero, you know, was missing.
A big
blow.
And I suppose at that stage, obviously, they probably didn't know that the war effort was so close to the end. But at that point, again, same here, history, like, World War history is not my strong suit. But at that point, they've been at this for several years now with the war. And could you imagine that feeling of heartbreak when you've had to go through so many years of hardship with this one thing keeping you going, and then just at the final hurdle that one thing disappears, and it's like, well, what have you got left to hope for at that point? Everyone's probably, you know, at the end of their absolute tethers, like, when is this thing going to be over? Oh, the one thing keeping us going, you know, oh, bye. And you couldn't imagine.
It must have been a rough Christmas with the rations and years of rationing and tough Christmases, and then this was like the toughest Christmas of all. They didn't know next Christmas the war would be over.
No, the straw that broke the camel's back, like collectively across the Western world, basically.
Yes. Let's have a look at, well, what happened to this flight on December the 15th. And this Norman Basil guy, this man who owned the plane. Now, his pilot, a man called John Morgan, he was only 22. Mm. He was a very inexperienced pilot.
Yeah.
Now, we don't know. We can only really conjecture that maybe he wanted to please his boss. He was told, you know, do this, you'll have a pay rise. You know, we don't know.
Yeah.
But it's easy to imagine that John Morgan, the pilot, was pressurized to make this flight when a more experienced older man maybe would have had the confidence to turn around and say, this isn't a good idea. It's not safe. It's hard not to imagine something like that happened. Mm. Although, you know, these conversations, nobody knows, only those men know. And they disappeared into the fog. Now, obviously, to get to Paris from Bedford, they had to fly over the English Channel. And the flight plan would have taken them along what's called the Chafe Corridor, which is the protected plane route between England and France over the Channel. Because, of course, this is wartime. Mm. That's the safe way for them to fly. Or safe in terms of they're not going to be subject to enemy aircraft, but not safe in terms of the weather.
No.
Yeah.
And the RAF, they did report that they saw the plane on course at 2:37 p.m. So we do know that for certain. Mm-hmm. And that's the last time anyone saw the plane after that. But I think this is an instance where the most likely explanation is probably the true one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got a young pilot who isn't very experienced. We have very bad weather. It's likely that because of the fog, the pilot became confused and he didn't know how low he was actually flying.
Right, yeah.
So he could have crashed into the sea because he didn't realise how low the plane was.
Yeah.
And if that happened, it is supposed that the three occupants of the plane, the pilot, Norman Basil and Glenn Miller, would have been killed on impact.
Mm. Right.
So it's very sad, and the plane and the bodies were never discovered. It might not be the most sort of interesting theory to people out there who want to.
Yeah. It was like the last episode that I recorded, the one that went up last by the time we're recording this, I think, was the Bermuda Triangle one. And
yes,
I think that's a similar thing where people have got all of these crazy theories, but the most likely one is the most boring. Like, it's just, it's always to do with weather and just the current of the sea. And people like to speculate about all these crazy theories when really it's just kind of, unfortunately, it's just a very, it's too many little things all come together. And if you've just got bad weather and an inexperienced pilot, it's kind of inevitable that something's going to happen.
Definitely. And also the unfortunate thing is with crash landings at sea, especially when it took so long to even know that this had happened in the first place, as you said, it was an unmarked plane. There was no flight plans or no one knew it was taking off.
Hmm.
By the time you realize all the evidence of anything having happened at all is in the sea, you know, the one bit of the world which like 95% of it has not been even remotely explored yet. What will probably happen one day is someone will do an exploration of the channel and may come across a bit of a plane that has survived all these years underwater. Maybe they won't. You don't know what the sea does to metal.
How many planes would have been shot down and so on over the channel?
Exactly.
During wartime.
Yeah, like May just thought it was another plane that got shot.
So, okay, the most likely explanation is, the plane crash because of the bad weather and
yeah.
an inexperienced pilot. But of course, other possibilities have reared their head. I would say that the next sort of viable possibility would be this one.
Mm.
Although it has been sort of quashed.
Oh.
But for some right. time, it was thought to be quite viable, although it did take decades to be discussed.
Yeah.
So an RAF navigator who was a part of 138 heavy bombers who were ordered to drop their bombs in the channel, he said that the plane carrying Glenn Miller was probably hit by one of these bombs being dropped in the sea, or that the pilot realized there were bombs around him, panicked, and then crashed.
Oh, no. Yeah.
So what had happened was that these bomber jets had been on their way to a German bombing target when they were told to turn round due to the bad weather.
Mm.
And because of the danger posed by the bombs they were carrying, they were told to drop them in the sea, which would have been considered the safest option.
Yeah.
So this RAF navigator, not only does he say that this mission was happening, he says he actually saw a plane that could have been Glenn Miller's plane.
Oh, right.
Mm. So, for a few reasons, this was seen as, you know, a possibility because, well, how would you say? He's a reliable witness. He's an experienced RAF navigator.
If anyone was going to know, you'd think it would be an RAF navigator, yeah.
Yes, exactly. Oh, gosh, can you imagine if that's what happened? Are the headlines, Glenn Miller killed by...
Yeah.
British bombers.
Bombs.
God. Yeah.
Ooh.
So you can, it's not a big step from there to imagine the military saying, oh my gosh, we have to say the plane just crashed.
Yeah.
And, you know, no RAF planes involved.
No. Like, could you imagine the fracture that would have caused between the British and the Americans, like the big hope and morale booster of the entire war effort got taken out by British troops.
Yeah.
That wouldn't end well.
No. And the ramifications for the actual war. I mean, if the US and the UK aren't getting on in early 1945, I mean, that could have been very dangerous.
Very dangerous.
Yeah. So, oh my goodness, all in all, this would have been a catastrophic situation, but it's also one that you can see, you know, it could have been possible.
Definitely.
And, yeah, it was seen as a possibility until a few issues cropped up.
Right.
And the first one being, and I know I'm always banging on about this, but the bad weather.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Even an RAF navigator, how could he have seen a plane?
Mm.
Yeah.
Like any plane, there's bombs dropping, there's dreadful fog, there's other aircraft around. Would he really have been able to see Glenn Miller's aircraft or any other
Especially
aircraft?
If it was a really tiny plane as well.
It's a very small plane.
Yeah.
Which isn't on any navigational systems because it wasn't supposed to leave.
It's not meant to be there.
No.
Yeah.
Mm.
Despite his, you know, his credentials and his experience, you know, he is, at the end of the day, he's still got a human pair of eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah. And not only that, and perhaps, I don't know, equal to that, it was discovered that the timings for this, well, I'm not sure what you'd call it, the dropping of the friendly fire, they didn't match. Because remember, we do know that Glenn Miller's plane was seen on the protected flight path at that 2:37 p.m.
Yeah.
Which doesn't match at all with when the friendly fire was being dropped
Right. Yeah.
So when when you bring those two things up, everything I was saying earlier, suddenly it falls apart, doesn't it?
Yes, yeah.
Little bit.
Yeah. Yes, but from here, though, now, I'm afraid, any sort of credibility thing, that all just goes out the window and we just get into the weird, the downright weird.
Right.
We love a bit of weird. We love a bit of weird on this channel. Yep, we love a theory.
we've got the weird theories.
Oh, go on then.
Perhaps not surprisingly, though, it popped up. Well, Glenn Miller must have been a spy, so he was taken out because he was a spy.
The worst spy imaginable, the most famous man at the time. Yeah, he's a spy.
Every movement is being watched by the US military.
Yeah,
he was feeding information to the Germans.
Clearly.
There's no basis for this at all.
No. It's like every note that he plays on his instrument is secretly a message to the Germans.
Somebody's going to say it over the last 70 odd years.
Oh, yeah, clearly.
Yeah. now we hit the weird.
Ooh.
So what if Glenn Miller survived, arrived in Paris.
Right.
Heads to a brothel.
Okay.
Heads to a brothel and then dies of a heart attack.
Right. Okay. Sure.
Is that the obvious? Obviously what happened.
Yes, yeah, because a plane crashing into the sea doesn't take him out, but the married man with children going to a brothel and having a heart attack, yeah, that's what happened.
Where did the plane go then? The plane landed fine. What happened to the pilot? What happened to Norman Basil? What happened to them?
Did they go to the brothel as well?
Yeah. This one cropped up in 1997.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Yeah. And apparently it was reported by a German journalist and they admitted they'd written this and that it had been just based on a rumour.
Right.
So I don't really understand how the sort of ethics of journalism allowed that to even be written.
Yeah.
Because surely you've got to back up your story a bit.
Yeah.
Just a little bit more than, I heard a rumour.
Mm.
Yeah, usually they want some basis of fact before they start.
I know, obviously, you can't believe everything you read.
Yeah.
People sue the newspapers for reporting things incorrectly. So I'm not saying, they're all whiter than white, but this just seems to have been plucked out of
thin air. It was a slow day. Yeah. It was a slow news day.
Yeah, I know. The idea behind it is, well, of course, the UK and US military couldn't turn round and say that, this beacon of hope, this hero with a young family and a wife had arrived in Paris to sneak off to a brothel.
Yeah.
So they had to pretend that the plane had crashed because this story is just too scandalous. But I don't know what was meant to have happened to Glenn Miller's body.
Well, that's the thing. It's the fact that, if he had died in a brothel, the family would have been given, or you would hope that the family would have been given his body so that they can, lay him to rest.
How do you cover that? How do you hide all that? It's just too, you got to fly him to the US. It's and the family, there's just too many ways for it to go wrong.
They would have been caught out somewhere if that had been the case, whether trying to dispose of the body, if they really wanted to go for the whole sea theory, if he had actually died at the brothel, if they tried to send him back, then they would have been like, oh, whose body is that? It would have been caught somewhere. But why do that? Because, it was 1997. You don't know if Glenn Miller's kids or grandkids are still around in 97.
They were. is the answer. Yeah.
Oh God. Like, could you imagine like your father dying traumatically and you find it out on Christmas Eve, 1944, and then decades later, some journalist decides to write this story about Glenn Miller, and it's like your dad, basically. Think of the families, man. Yeah. Like, that must have been horrendous to read. You know, your father, the biggest morale booster of World War II, and they're writing about him being in a brothel. It's like, no, don't do that to the family.
Yeah, the family have been through enough.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we live in a world, we have now have the internet, and it won't sort of die a death.
Yeah, no.
People want to believe it, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Now I don't want this to fuel what we were just talking about, the body.
Right.
There is a grave. They have made a grave.
Yeah.
In New Haven, Connecticut, for Glenn Miller.
Mm.
Which says that he went missing and wasn't discovered. But, you know, I can appreciate that it's a natural human thing to want to go to a grave.
Yeah.
You know, it's quite nice that obviously fans and admirers of his music can also pay their respects.
Yeah.
It's like us having memorials all over this country for, you know, the people who were confirmed dead during the war, but they couldn't necessarily find the bodies, or there was nothing to find, like in the case of Glenn Miller. So having a memorial site, even if it's a empty grave, as it were, or a headstone or something, is always a nice thing to have for the families, if nothing else, somewhere to go remember them, basically.
Yeah. And the last thing I wanted to talk about really goes back to what you were saying a bit earlier, Ellie. You really hit the nail on the head, actually, about how, potentially a piece of plane could wash up. Now, there is actually a group, the International Group for Historic Aircraft Recovery.
Mm.
And their sort of tagline is, from mystery to history.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So they are interested in lots of sort of missing planes, including other famous ones like Amelia Earhart.
Mm-hmm.
Classic example, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. So they want to raise money to go and try and find Glenn Miller's plane.
Yeah.
And a very interesting tidbit, really, is that they think it could have been discovered in 1987.
Right. Really?
Yeah, that a fisherman, got a piece of plane in his net instead of some fish.
Okay.
Yes. What do you do?
Now this is the thing, and this is, do you agree with this, or do you think he did the wrong thing?
Okay.
Can you imagine you bring a piece of plane at that? Personally, I would be just sort of a bit shocked and a bit panicky, maybe.
Yeah.
Not expecting it, no.
No, I'm not. And what do you do? So the fisherman dropped it back in the sea.
Right.
Caught thinking, I don't know whether, presumably he must have thought it's historic.
Mm.
Is it ethical to, bring it out of the sea? Because we know it was a site where, people died.
Mm.
Is it like a grave at sea? Is it a war grave, the memorials in France are?
Yeah.
It's a tricky one in many respects. I can thoroughly understand why he threw it back in the sea in a midst of sort of panic and, what do I do? But at the same time, the other option could have been to actually take it to the war office or whatever.
Someone could identify it.
Yeah, and if it was then a gravesite as opposed to, then it's up to them to decide whether it goes back in the sea or whether they use it as a starting point to find something, or I don't know what the official procedures are. with finding evidence essentially like that.
And the channel, who I don't know who owns what, you know.
Hotly debated from what I know.
At the moment, yes, definitely as well. With Brexit and God knows what.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
So it's not clear, is it?
No. Yeah, it may be called the English Channel, but the French have their own name for it because they certainly do not call it the English Channel. But yeah, then there's also that. It's like, okay, was it an English gravesite? Was it a French gravesite that it came from? Hell, was it a German gravesite? You know, like if it's one of their guys, do you then get them involved to get a digger? If anyone happens to know anything about what you would do in a situation like that, the guy might have been an easier time for him just to throw it back into the sea. But this could get very complicated very quickly.
Yes. Well, the good news is that he knew where he was, so he knew the coordinates of where he was.
Yeah.
But I mean, I would imagine pieces of plane can move, and that was in 1987.
Yeah.
I really don't know.
Yeah.
Drop a bit of plane back, it's not going to go exactly where it was before either, is it?
No.
But this group, the Group for Historic Aircraft Recovery, they've been talking about this, you know, in recent years, sort of in the past 5 years. So I don't know where they are with them. They were trying to raise, I think it was $30,000 or $40,000. So I can't really find any other updates sort of post that they wanted to do this, and they thought that this fisherman had found this plane. So who knows? The door isn't entirely closed on this.
Yeah.
So that's the story of the disappearance of Glenn Miller and the traumatic Christmas of 1944.
Oh, my word.
Crazy.
A twisty one.
Yeah.
Lots of things to think about with that one in terms of ethics and...
Yeah, it brings up so many issues, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Recovery and, you know, as you say quite rightly, you know, not just Glenn Miller but also Amelia Earhart and her very famous flight disappearance, and with our Bermuda Triangle episode, like all those people that disappeared in and around the Bermuda Triangle as well. It's like, what do you do when the evidence essentially disappears into whether it's thin air or the water?
Both in this case in a way
I was going to say, just thinking back to our Bermuda Triangle episode, I'm surprised no one's come up with the theory that Glenn Miller and his plane disappeared into a wormhole of some description. That's one that
it's only a matter of time.
Theory.
Yeah.
If they can come up with that that Paris brothel one.
Oh, that's atrocious.
God.
That's atrocious. Yeah. Don't do that to people. It's not nice.
No.
But the son, Glenn Miller's son, who died in 2012, he had been in touch with the Historic Aircraft Recovery Group, which sort of puts another light on it again, because if the family give their permission, does that make it okay to go and find the plane?
Yeah, I suppose, because if they recover anything, I don't know how much you would be able to recover if... human remains, I suppose, because salt water plus fish and other animals.
Yeah, 75 years.
There might not be anything to recover, but you know, if they found something, like if he was wearing jewelry or a watch, a belonging, something that they can remember him by, you know, they probably want that.
I was going to say, if you want more sort of Christmas mysteries like this, last year I actually did a whole episode where I covered multiple sort of Christmas mysteries. It was like this, where it's like mysteries that happened around Christmas. So yeah, if you want to go and listen to that, if you're interested in some more sort of weird, mysterious happenings around Christmas time, it covered things like, there were like UFO sightings, there were God, I can't remember. There was a big riot that they called the eggnog riot. there were, yeah, many things. Another war story, there was the World War One Christmas truce that I remember telling, and I remember making you cry during that episode, yeah. Telling the story of it.
It always breaks my heart, that bit. It's
yeah,
like,
oh, yeah. So that was, hang on, episode 47. So wow. If you want to go and listen to that, then that's another one with Christmas mysteries. Also, if you want to listen to more Klinos, then you can do. I will link all the episodes and things in the notes on the website, learnaboutpod.com, if you want to hear more mysteries and also hear more of Klinos. We've had done some great episodes in the past. So, yeah, thank you so much for coming again.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
It's always so much fun having a guest. And yeah, I like that you're becoming just one of our regular guests.
It's Klinos was the OG guest though.
Yeah, so you were our first guest. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, it's nice always having you back. Yeah, as I said, the website is learnaboutpod.com. You can also support us on Patreon. Klinos does already because she's great.
It's a really great deal as well.
It's patreon.com/learnaboutpod. It's only £2 a month. We've just started bonus episodes. We're trying to do two bonus episodes a month. We do something called Tangent Tuesday, where every week we just chat about the podcast so far. We kind of let you in on our stats and things like that, and we share some of the things that we recommend that week. So it's just a lot of fun. You can go and watch all those. We'll send you a postcard and a bunch of other stuff, and it's only £2 a month. So all the shout outs, we also give you a shout out in every episode, that will be at the end of this episode, and yeah, that would be great if you go and support us there. I think that's everything.
Yes.
Yeah,
social media as well, if for any reason. Obviously Patreon completely. If you don't have the money, that's absolutely fine. Just following us, liking our stuff on our social media channels. We're at Twitter and Instagram at LearnAboutPod on both. Just giving us a like or, you know, a message or just viewing any of our stuff always means the world to us. So obviously, if you can't support us in a monetary thing, that's no problem at all. Social media is free.
Yeah. Feel free. And just listening to the podcast.
And just listening. Podcast is always much as appreciated.
Yeah, we will be back next week for another Christmas episode. We have two Christmas episodes coming up.
Three in total. We got three this season. Obviously Klinos was the first, and then we got the other two.
Yeah, so we've got two more coming up. And then it will be, after that will be our 100th episode, which is just bad. So yes, we'll see you next week for some festivities. And I hope you have a great week. Bye.
Bye!
Thank you so much to everyone who supports us over on Patreon. We have Klinos, Luke, Bryony, Linda, Michael, and Sarah. We appreciate your support. Thank you so much.